We've got live golf today. We're getting you set for the Southwest Airlines Showcase at Cedar Crest. Second year tournament is an all-star invitational celebrating the talents of top college-age golfers who are leaders in further diversifying the game. Coverage coming your way at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time here on Golf Channel. And welcome into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Golf Channel senior writer Rex Hoggard. And Rex, I feel as though this week we're talking a lot on one side of personality, the other side of practicalities, I suppose, or mechanics. We've got the Caitlin Clark chatter on one side, and then the PGA Tour increasingly consumed among the membership about the vote on what's going to happen and what the outcome's going to be.
On the Caitlin Clark side, and as a sports fan, I've watched this unfold over the last 12 months, let's say ever since she was in college and what she has done in the NBA. She's a generational player, and I think it's always good for golf when you have a player like this that sort of transcends sports and goes into society in general that loves golf. We're going to see that today. I think that's great for the game. It's certainly going to be great for the LPGA Tour event this week. On the other side of it, there is a weariness. I think everyone is burnt out. You and I are tired of talking about it, and we're professionals. We should want to talk about it. And so, yes, I see the dichotomy there, and it shows you the state of the game right now on the men's side versus the women's side.
None of us are actually unhappy to see Caitlin Clark in here. She's going to be a welcome relief for a lot of us. It is a big week on the LPGA Tour. WNBA superstar Caitlin Clark will be on site at the Amica, driven by Gainbridge at Pelican. Tomorrow, she will tee it up in the Pro-Am with Nelly Korda and the tournament host, Annika Sorenstam. You can catch live coverage of her on the course right here on Golf Today, starting at 11 a.m. She's already a transformational figure in basketball. The Rookie of the Year with the Indiana Fever this year. The first rookie since 2008 to make the All-WNBA first team. Two-time National Player of the Year at Iowa. And the NCAA Division all-time scoring leader in Division I, 3,951 points. We're going to welcome in now Ciara K. Dixon, who's on site for us at the tournament. Ciara, what's the vibe out there like this week as they get anticipation for Caitlin Clark tomorrow?
Well, Eamon, Rex just mentioned the word weariness. There is none of that here. The word that I would use is giddiness. There is a buzz about the place. There's so much energy and excitement around the fact that Caitlin Clark is here. She's actually on site already. She's about to speak at the Women's Leadership Summit. And of course, as you mentioned, she's going to be teeing it up in the Pro-Am tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. The Women's Leadership Summit has been an incredible effort put together by Gainbridge. And the speakers include Kathy Ireland, the model turned mogul, Annika Sorenstam, and Caitlin Clark. Annika and Caitlin are about to take the stage. The two of them are going to be having a conversation around being self-made and what it's like to create your own path and blaze your own path and whatever it is your dreams might be, something that Annika and Caitlin are very, very familiar with. And in terms of just how excited the players are to be here and play in the actual golf tournament, because we do have a big golf tournament happening this week, we have to send a special shout out to Pelican Golf Club and the Doyle family. I heard that this pond behind me just a few weeks ago due to Hurricane Helene was actually taking up this entire fairway area. They have made an incredible effort in putting this golf course back together after that damaging hurricane rolled through. You would never know that anything like that happened here. So certainly a lot of positivity as we look to all the festivities happening tomorrow with Caitlin Clark and beyond for the golf tournament.
Now, Ciara, you've had an opportunity to talk to some players about the Caitlin Clark experience, let's call it. What kind of reaction have you heard?
Oh, my goodness. These players are so excited for the Caitlin Clark experience. I ran into Andrea Lee on the putting green, and she said, my tee time is at 7:10 a.m., so I'm hoping that that overlaps well enough that I'll be able to get a picture. And then on the other side of that, Megan Kang said, oh, man, my tee time is in the afternoon. There's no shot that I'm going to be able to catch her in time for a photo. And Marina Alex was especially excited because her locker is next to Caitlin's in the locker room. Said she walked in and saw there she was. She's got a placard just like all the LPGA players right next to her. So perhaps Marina can pick her brain as they're getting ready to head out to the golf course. And of course, you had to chat with Lilia Vu, who's the defending champion. The first thing she said to me was, oh my goodness, so excited that Caitlin's here. She's going to bring so many eyeballs to this week and to our game in general.
Ciara, just getting back to this idea of the weariness, excuse me, we see on the men's side all the time. That particularly shows its face around celebrity pro-ams, where it's kind of saturation point over the years in men's golf. That's not really the case in terms of the LPGA Tour. The impact this week is going to far outstrip any sense of cynicism that people might have about celebrities and pro-ams, right?
Yeah, I would think so. We've kind of gotten used to seeing Steph Curry teeing it up, Patrick Mahomes teeing it up, Travis Kelce teeing it up. It's a norm. It's usual for us to see these male celebrities. So sometimes, as you mentioned, sometimes people even view it with a bit of cynicism. But when you have somebody like Caitlin Clark take the time to come and bring all of the attention that comes with Caitlin Clark to the women's game, to the women's sport, it's incredible the reaction that it has received. And as coming from someone that has played in some of those pro-ams, I actually got my start in golf media by playing in these pro-ams. I can tell you firsthand just the impact that it can have on you personally by just showing up. Nobody cares how you play. I guarantee you nobody is going to care what Caitlin Clark shoots tomorrow. They are just excited that she's here, that she's swinging a golf club. There are going to be so many dads with their daughters, moms with their daughters here walking the golf course, pointing out Caitlin Clark, this person that you can see, that you can be. And that is an incredible amount of impact. So this would be my pitch to any female celebrity out there watching golf today is please come to our pro-ams. Please come and participate in the game of golf. You are welcome. You are wanted. We want you here because it's just an impact that I can't even begin to describe. And also my pitch to any pro-am out there, any tournament director, get as many women as you can playing in your golf tournament because there's a certain amount of comfort that comes from having a group of us and not just being the only woman on the driving range.
Well, it's certainly the most talked about Wednesday I can remember in recent memory in golf. Thanks for stopping by, Kira. We'll check in with you again later in the show.
Thanks, guys.
We'll have coverage of Caitlin Clark's Pro-Am on Wednesday from the Anika, driven by Gainbridge. You can see highlights from the Pro-Am on Golf Today and Golf Central. Coming up next on Golf Today, big changes are potentially coming to the PGA Tour and how they distribute FedEx Cup points. One player, Maverick McNealy, helped to crunch the numbers, and he's here to break it all down. Stay tuned for the math portion of the show. We welcome in Mav from Bermuda, where he's preparing for this week's PGA Tour event. And Mav, I want to get right to it. You took a really deep dive. And for those of us that didn't go to a very, very smart school and have a very big brain like you, can you just kind of walk us through what you discovered when it came to the inequity between the points that were awarded at full field events versus signature events and how you came up with a solution?
I don't know. You're giving me a little too much credit here, but really it was something that a lot of guys pointed out even before the season started, that it seemed like those signature events were getting too many points relative to just the regular PGA Tour events with 500 points to the winner. And it was hard to really know and be able to predict the fields and predict how strong those events were going to be. And the tour was kind of targeting a 60-ish percent turnover rate or something along those lines for that top 50 number. But about halfway through the year, it just felt like those guys playing those signature events were getting such a big advantage on the points, and I wanted to figure out how. And there's a website called datagolf.com that does a really good kind of objective stroke analysis of how guys play, and they have this metric called true strokes gained, which normalizes across the strengths of fields, the size of fields. Pretty much it can compare a player playing in one tournament against a player in another tournament and see who played better. And so, you know, same thing with the world ranking, OWGR, they do the same thing. So I really just wanted to see if there was anything to it and figured out, you know, 300 points is a win on an opposite field event, second place in a regular PGA Tour event. And I think it's like a fifth or a sixth place finish in a signature event. And so I did that for 300 points, 100 points, you know, 80, 60, 40, and 20, I think. And basically tried to figure out, you know, the guys earning that same number of points in different tournaments, were they playing the same? Was one playing better than the other? And it turns out that from positions 8 to 30th-ish, the signature events were giving out too many points for the quality of play. And so I brought those, actually showed those to some other players, to my coaches, and it seemed like the news spread like wildfire because a lot of guys were feeling this and seeing this, and I think they're excited to see kind of some numbers backing up what they were thinking. And you know, it ended up coming to, I talked with Kirsten Burgess a bunch with the tour, and you know, they were also on the same kind of track, and we kind of put our numbers together, and they came out with a nice smooth curve, and it seems like hopefully the board approves this and it goes into place next year.
I read in the Golf Week story, Maverick, that It was specifically looking at some numbers from Corey Connors in back-to-back weeks during the summer that gave you this kind of jarring reality of just how much the inequity was visible in one guy playing good golf in consecutive weeks and being rewarded entirely differently.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the Corey Connors example is just like a really palatable, you know, chunk of information where in back-to-back weeks at the Memorial and the Canadian Open, he finished in a two-way tie for 20th at the Memorial signature event with signature event points and a solo sixth at the Canadian Open. And I think he got 97.5 points at the Memorial and 100 points at the Canadian Open. It was roughly the same, but you look at that and saying, man, two-way tie for 20th in a small field versus beating 150 players at the Canadian Open, it doesn't seem right. And sure enough, it's a full stroke difference on data golf, which is quite a big difference. So, you know, I think under the new proposed point system, he would have gotten probably closer to 75. I'm making that number up. It's roughly 75-ish points in the signature event at the Memorial versus 100 at the Canadian Open. So obviously there's still, you're beating better players in the signature events, so you'll get more points than you know, the same finish in a regular event, but I think field size was not really accounted for initially.
Now, Matt, you were part of the Player Advisory Council that came up with the larger perspective here, which is a proposal to actually cut field sizes at many PGA Tour events and cut the number of fully exempt members on the PGA Tour. As a member of a PAC that came up with this plan, why did you have to go down this road? And do you think this is the right direction for the future of the PGA Tour?
Full disclosure here, I joined about halfway through the season and these discussions were already underway. You know, I've spent a lot of time listening here. I can see both sides. I definitely can see how, you know, on one side, we want to be maximizing the playing opportunities for as many guys as we can, give as many guys as we can a chance to compete. I also see the side where, you know, tournaments, it's not much fun when you're warming up in the dark and you're racing and there's two or three groups hitting into each other on the last hole trying to finish before daylight, and volunteers and staff and players coming back early in the morning for restarts, how that's kind of hard for media coverage. So I can see both sides. It's hard to say one or the other is more correct. I think it just comes down to what's going to be the best product for the PGA Tour to put forward. I don't have a super strong opinion. Like I said, I can see both sides, and I just hope that whatever is decided is ultimately best for the tour.
That vote's going to happen on November 18th, and it's probably safe to say, Maverick, that your points formula redressing here is probably going to be the most popular thing that they're voting on in terms of guaranteeing support across the membership. But even in the last week, we've heard guys like Patrick Harrington and Lucas Glover and Justin Lauer speak out quite strongly against the idea of reducing fields. Do you think there's the possibility that enough members will be uneasy with this that it might actually impact the vote, or do you expect it will actually pass?
My gut says it'll probably pass, because most things that get to the board level tend to pass. And, you know, it just kind of starts with the tour and then it comes to the PAC, where we give, you know, we're Player Advisory Council. We give advice, we kind of give our input on it, and then it goes to the board for the vote. So the PAC doesn't actually decide anything. We just kind of offer feedback, offer insight. And, you know, a lot of the times our suggestions are, you know, most of the time our suggestions are really looked into, but we're not the ones making the decisions. It's hard to say. I really do think that, you know, apples to apples, wherever you play will be equally rewarded for good play with points is a popular thing. And, you know, I don't know. It's a difficult one.
Matt, we spent the last few days kind of talking about what the fall series has become on the PGA Tour. What does it mean to you? You came into the fall with a pretty good number. You already had your PGA Tour card. But what was your plan over the course of the fall?
So there's that next 10 category getting into the signature events. And the first two of the year, excluding Kapalua, are AT&T at Pebble and Genesis at Riv. And those are two of my favorite events of the entire season. And numbers 51 through 60 on the FedEx Cup get into those. So coming in at 53, I just missed out on the top 50, getting all of those for next year, which, you know, playing out of the medical category, I was pretty happy with. Playing in a, you know, the regular events, not the signature events, I was really proud of that finish. But wanted to really make sure I got those first two signature events. I love those tournaments. So six T6 finish in Mexico last week. I'm pretty sure I'm all but locked up for the top 60. But now I'm still playing two chances to try to get to Kapalua. Top 50 in the world at the end of the December will get me in the Masters. So 68th right now, I'll probably need a win or a second place at least. But also I'm just out here with my wife. My brother's caddying for me. I've got no kids. I've got nowhere better to be than trying to win a golf tournament and have some fun playing in Bermuda. So I'm really excited to be here.
Marberg, I just want to go back on our last question to the points formula. A lot of fans might say, at face value, somebody ought to get more points playing decent golf in a signature event because of the perception that it's a smaller field of the absolute elite in the game. Is it fair to say that players look at it from a different point of view, that it doesn't just matter who you beat, but it actually matters the quality of golf that you played in that given week?
100%, totally agree with that. That being said, if you finish sixth in a signature event and sixth in a regular event, you're still going to get more points in the signature event. I just think it was slightly overdone. And even backing up 2 years ago when the signature events were first introduced, I actually skipped a couple because the winner was only getting 550 points versus 500 in a regular event. It was actually easier to earn points in the regular events because they were weaker fields, same number of players. So I think the tour overcorrected a little bit. And now I think we found middle ground now that we know what 1 year's worth of fields makeup looks like. But it's definitely hard playing against 155 other players. There's a lot of good players out here. The fields are so deep now, and there's going to be, you know, 10% of their guys are having the week of their year. And so you're going to have to beat 10 guys who are playing awesome any given week to win.
Well, I'm sure your parents are very proud that you finally found a use for that management science degree from Stanford as a professional golfer. Fascinating subject. We can't wait to see how the vote goes. Thanks for the time, Maverick.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Golf Today will be right back.
We're back on Golf Today. It's been a difficult time for the people of North Carolina following the devastation left from Hurricane Helene, which passed through the state in late September. Historic rainfall totals led to flooding that the area is still currently recovering from. First Tee Central Carolina began in 2018 through volunteer service. In 2024, the chapter added additional resources and now has multiple staff members in the area. They launched a Hurricane Helene Recovery Fund with 100% of the money going to families and program facilities that were impacted by the storm, as well as the future of the chapter. In 2025, programming will be free for all kids in Western North Carolina. For more now, we welcome in Parker Reeves. He's the Director of Development for the First Tee in Western North Carolina. Now, Parker, you grew up in this area of the world. It has been devastating. What have the last few weeks been like for you?
Yeah, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. It really has been. The last 6 weeks have been something that we've never seen before. It's just unprecedented here with the hurricane and the mudslides and the things that came with that. You know, we're just not used to seeing that in the mountains. So it's been difficult for sure, but it's been amazing to see the efforts of recovery and the resources that have been brought to the area. That's been awesome.
Parker, what has the impact been like specifically in terms of your ability to deliver the First Tee programming to the kids there?
Yeah, unfortunately, the impact was pretty large. We had to close programming at both of our facilities. Both sites suffered really bad devastation from the hurricane. One in particular, Asheville Municipal, you know, several million dollars worth of damage. A lot of the pictures that were on the screen earlier were from there, and it's been tough. So, you know, a lot of places don't have water still, power. So we're still seeing the effects of that. And unfortunately, we did have to shut our programming down for the rest of the year.
Now, I mentioned the recovery fund when I introduced you. What do you hope to accomplish with this fund?
Well, that's something we're really excited about. We are going to be offering free programming to any youth at our sites in Western North Carolina starting in 2025. We're actually adding a location in the spring as well. So we're going to be able to bring in more kids than we were last year, and to be able to do it completely free for anyone that's interested is something we're really excited about doing through the fund.
How many kids are there in your chapters in North Carolina right now, Parker, who have actually been impacted and kind of taken out of this routine of the first tee?
Yeah, so we program in two locations in the spring and fall, and we're probably seeing, you know, somewhere around 50 kids between those programs. You know, our sister chapter in Central Carolina's, you know, several hundred. We're still a smaller chapter trying to grow. So this was kind of a tough bump for us in kind of our growth mode. But, you know, unfortunately, we did have one in particular that had to move out of state and was able to join another first tee program for a little bit until they could get back in their house. So it has affected. We have staff member in Asheville that still doesn't have water, you know, 6 weeks into this, and probably won't for another month almost. So it's been tough on everybody, really.
Parker, I asked you before we came up, just out of curiosity, you've lived in North Carolina your whole life. Have you ever experienced anything like this?
No, nothing even close. We had a blizzard back in 1993 with about 3 feet of snow. And other than that, we don't see weather patterns and major storms like this. So, you know, we weren't prepared. The area wasn't prepared. Towns and cities weren't prepared, rightfully so. We wouldn't have known what to expect. And just with the amount of water and mudslides and things, it's been wild.
Well, we certainly wish you and the chapter there all the best in the recovery methods. Parker, thanks for joining us to update us on what's happening down there.
Yeah, thank you guys very much for the opportunity.
Golf Today will return after this. Time now for Golf Today Roundtable as we welcome in Golf Channel senior writer Ryan Lavner and Taylor Zarzar, the host of The Starter on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. Taylor, I want to start with you. We're almost at the end of this FedEx Cup fall. We have a fairly clear picture of what it means for the players in terms of securing their status. We kind of know what it means for hardcore fans who are going to watch this product wherever it's on, no matter who's playing. Does it work overall, though, in your mind, in terms of the broader appeal of the professional product of men's golf?
Yeah, I do wonder if maybe we need to secure someone's playing privileges in August. You know, at the Wyndham Championship, we're doing that for a number of years, and there seemed to be more drama there because it was before football season, and it's ending on network television, and you're seeing someone... whether their playing privileges are going to be secured for the following season of the PGA Tour, or they're going back to the Korn Ferry Tour. I'll be in Sea Island next week. I love it there. I think it's great that the fall, we've created some more juice around the fall. I just don't know that the casual fan is that aware of what we're doing this time of year. You're right about the diehard fan. And I still think that there needs to be some sort of battleground playing privileges that are at stake in the fall, but I do wonder if maybe it makes more sense to decide who's on the PGA Tour for the following year in August instead of in late November. And I cannot wait to see whether you or Hoggard asks Lavner about this playoff beard and if this is the result of losing to Ole Miss last week.
Great transition. Lav, you okay first and foremost? We see all the Georgia stuff in the background. We'll go ahead and give you the floor.
It's fine. All wrongs can be righted this weekend against Tennessee.
I believe in that. We'll pivot to something else. The European Tour is wrapping up their season. Of course, the top 10 who aren't already exempt for the PGA Tour, they earn a card. And this has led to a larger conversation about if the proposal passes next week and you have fewer cards, fewer members, which pathway, which pipeline is more important to make it to the PGA Tour, the Korn Ferry Tour or the European Tour?
Rex, I think you could make the argument that DP World Tour is the more important pathway to the PGA Tour, and I think it sort of extends beyond the current politicking of the moment and making sure that they're warding off the existential threat of LIV Golf potentially buying into the DP World Tour. You look at what has happened now with these 10 players who have graduated or will graduate from the DP World Tour to the PGA Tour. It's the first time they've done that, and six of those 10 players are now in position to keep their PGA Tour card. Look at Bob McIntyre, who has completely changed the trajectory of his career by graduating to the PGA Tour. You look at Matthew Pavon, who won at Torrey Pines, played alongside Bryson DeChambeau in the final group at the Pinehurst U.S. Open. Not all of those players who graduate from the European Tour are going to hit. It's obviously a big transition going from playing over there to playing predominantly in the States for the PGA Tour. But a lot of these players are so well-rounded just because of where they play. And if you're the PGA Tour, you are trying to ensure that the PGA Tour is the preeminent circuit for all these guys to compete. And so I think there are ways to get around it and even go deeper than what the PGA Tour is proposing here. You could even look at and sort of borrow a concept from the Aon Swing 5, where you're creating more in-season promotion, whether it's a guy like Matt McCarty on the Korn Ferry Tour or Tristan Lawrence on the DP World Tour, outstanding performers, get them in onto the PGA Tour quicker. That way you're going from strength to strength and not even waiting until the end of the season.
Taylor, speaking of guys playing or not playing at certain events, Rory McIlroy mentioned last week in Abu Dhabi that there were at least four events that he played this year that he's not going to play next year, one of which was the FedEx St. Jude Championship, one of the three playoff events, which can't really have gone down too well at Tour headquarters. Does this speak to the fundamental issue in golf that the Saudis managed to exploit, which is the talent isn't contracted? They can't be told where they're going to play. Unlike, you, I mean, you cover a lot of sports, you cover a lot of football. Those guys don't get to decide when they're going to sit a game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's, yes, there is a fundamental issue when you can take weeks off in the playoffs. And by the way, if I were Rory McIlroy, after how he played in Memphis this past year, and if you, knowing that he was in the top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings and that his position wasn't going to change almost at all by playing in Memphis, he's, it completely makes sense that he would take the tournament off in the current structure. But to your point, there has to be some sort of penalty for the best players to miss a playoff event. If they're going to be two, three, four, however many playoff events they're going to be, you need those people to play in those events. I think another example, and you just mentioned other sports, Eamon, NASCAR just finished their playoffs. You can't take a week off in the playoffs and then get to the championship the final week in Phoenix if you took one of those weeks off. You have to be there in order to be eligible to play for a championship. So I don't think there's any question the PGA Tour needs to change that after all. Assuming that we get to unification, they're going to have to fix that so that the best players are playing in each of their playoff events. Now, having said that, Eamon, you know Rory McIlroy better than anybody that's having this conversation right now. If I'm Rory McIlroy, all I'm thinking about is how my schedule is going to produce a major championship victory moving forward. That is the only thing I'm thinking about when I'm planning my schedule in 2025 and beyond.
Now, Lab, I asked Todd Lewis this yesterday, and I know you like to fix things and you like to have hot takes, but if I made you the czar of professional golf for one day, two-part question. One, is the fall schedule broken, and how would you fix it?
Part A, yes, the fall series is broken, and B, I would fix it simply by trimming it. I like the idea of having a series of tournaments that have meaning, that have consequence, but they can't be 8 or 9 weeks long. You're essentially just had a 45-week regular season, and then you're adding on top of that another fourth of the season. It's just too spread out. I love the idea of Q school, where it matters, where there's nerves, where it means something, where there's actual promotion and relegation. Spreading it out over 2 or 3 months is just too long. It's too hard. It's too arduous. The hardcore fans may be paying attention, but the casual fan is not. Simply tighten it to 3 or 4 weeks, and then open up the rest of the schedule for fun formats, for team golf, for more events on the DP World Tour that could be integrated in the PGA Tour schedule. It opens up a whole host of opportunities just by shortening this particular portion of the calendar.
Rex, isn't this the place to have the live events? I mean, isn't this the part of the schedule where if it's ever going to work, if that format is ever going to work, wouldn't it be at this time of the year?
Well, it would certainly seem to be an argument for guys who are advocating for a global part of the tour that post-FedEx Cup would certainly appear to be the open time frame. There's one question I wanted to ask both of you guys. Taylor, I'll start with you. We've heard Harrington be negative about these potential changes. Justin Lauer at the weekend, Lucas Glover very much the same. Do you think there's enough of a groundswell of discontent among tour membership about these potentially smaller fields and fewer fully exempt players on tour that it might actually impact the vote on November 18th? Or do you think that's a foregone conclusion?
It's hard for me to know how many people could necessarily impact the vote. But I would say this, in Lucas's defense, who made a compelling argument, shameless plug, on SiriusXM, what he said was, have we really tried to penalize slow play? mean, have we taken a shot away from a player after playing slowly or two or three? He wants serious consequences for slow play on a Thursday or Friday before you trim the fields. Try that before people are out of a job. And that to me makes sense. And I do think there's a number of players that agree with Lucas that are probably watching right now that agree with Lucas. And to his defense, I think ideally it would be nice to try that, that there would be some serious consequences. When you start penalizing a player a shot, a fine, you can forget it. That's no real penalty to these guys, especially with the amount of money they're making now. But you take a stroke away from them, all of a sudden you make them miss a cut because of slow play, then I think that is a serious consequence. I wonder if the PGA Tour should try that before they, in fact, trim these field sizes.
And guys, to your point, I mean, you guys just had Maverick McNealy on the show. He said, you know, traditionally, historically, when it gets to the board level, it's rubber stamped. The pack has done all the work they're merely presenting to. There's no popular vote here. There's no electoral college. It does seem like a foregone conclusion, or at least some formality. I mean, raising the bar for excellence or acceptance to the next year, I think, is something that should be applauded, something that should be recommended. You know, I understand that there's going to be fewer players, which means fewer storylines, but there's still going to be 100 fully exempt players. The players in that other category from 101 to 125, they're still going to get roughly a dozen starts or so. There's still going to be ample opportunity for those players to change the trajectory of their careers. It's just eliminating some complacency. It's eliminating some mediocrity at the lower level, which I still think is a net positive for the PGA Tour.
That's a sentiment that's going to make you real popular next time you're out on the range there, Ryan. Look forward to that. Guys, I'm sure we'll be having this conversation again next week after the actual policy board vote. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, you. Guys.
Back on Golf Today, there's just a couple weeks left in the LPGA Tour season, and this week they're in Bel Air, Florida for the Annika, driven by Gainbridge. You can catch tomorrow's Pro-Am at 11 a.m. on Golf Channel. That's Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. But before the competition kicks off on Thursday, there's going to be a show in town today and tomorrow as WNBA superstar Caitlin Clark is set to tee it up in the Pro-Am alongside Nelly Korda and Annika Sorumsen. For more on what the week will be like, we welcome in the friend of the program, Bethann Nichols, who is on site this week. And Bethann, we don't talk about the vibe during the Pro-Am very often, but what's it like on property right now?
There's definitely a buzz in the air. I think there's a lot of excitement about what's to come. Caitlin Clark is actually speaking as a part of a panelist this afternoon. So for those who are lucky enough to be in the room, that's exciting. Of course, people can watch it and stream online as well. But I know players are getting excited about seeing some of Caitlin's action tomorrow.
Do you get the sense, Bethann, that it will actually draw a different audience that might not otherwise pay as much attention to the LPGA Tour this week, but they will pay attention because Caitlin Clark is there?
Oh, 100%. You know, I think she's one of the biggest female athletes in the world right now. And I can only imagine how many fathers are going to have their daughters tune in to watch Caitlin Clark hit a golf ball, much like they have had them watch basketball. So, you know, I expect to see, you know, a lot of youngsters out here tomorrow. My understanding is, you know, they've sold quite a few Pro-Am round tickets. You know, I think the key here, though, will be how to keep Caitlin coming back, that this isn't just a one-time deal.
Bethann, you had a story a few weeks ago about Caitlin Clark going to a new swing coach. Can you just talk about how passionate she is about this game?
Oh, she's been playing golf for a really long time, since I think about the age of 10. And, you know, she of course wants to be great at everything she does. I love the fact that she went to a former LPGA player, Martha Foyer Falconer, to get some lessons at Crooked Stick, and she just talked about how passionate she was about the game. She wanted to get rid of her slice. They worked on her short game. Mostly she wanted to pound drivers, she said. You know, so she's been around the game for a long time, but I think, you know, was still learning a lot of the basics from Martha, and I'm excited to see, you know, how she feels inside the ropes in terms of nerves and putting all of that into play, because a lot of folks are going to be anxious to see what her game looks like. And probably, I would imagine, some players will be getting some autographs and taking photographs.
She is a proud professional athlete, of course, and has been working up to this moment, and she's probably nervous as well. But the reality is, it doesn't really matter how she plays, right? The impact of Caitlin Clark this week is not going to be measured on a scorecard.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Her presence alone is all that matters. Her love for the game is all that matters. I think probably the only person that is worried about how she plays is, I would imagine, Caitlin herself. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is all about what we can do, you know, as a group here collectively to grow women's sports. I think that's what's on the mind of everyone here. And, you know, I was talking to Ronnie Yin earlier today. She's a huge Steph Curry fan, big basketball fan. She said she just found out that Caitlin was coming and she was so excited. You know, she said it's not just about one person moving this needle. It takes a group of people. And she's absolutely right. As she sees her own star rise in China and what she hopes to do for golf in China, you know, she's excited that someone like Caitlin Clark, you know, has such a passion for this game as well.
It's always fun during a pro-am like this to watch how professional athletes, professional golfers become fans to a certain degree when they're paired with a Caitlin Clark, as you pointed out, a Steph Curry. What do you think the reception is going to be like, athlete to athlete?
I think there's a tremendous amount of respect for what Caitlin has done to elevate women's sport in general. And I know she's going to get that from Annika for sure. She's playing alongside Annika for 9 holes. But then also, you know, Nelly Korda, you know, obviously the current world number one, I'm sure will be very interested in getting to know Caitlin. And, you know, there's no female athlete right now that's being scrutinized as much as everything that Caitlin Clark does. And so, you know, that's something that Nelly can relate to, and maybe she will ask questions about how do you deal with pressure and people wanting to know every aspect of your life and being the torchbearer for something. How do you handle that? I am curious to hear what the conversations are like, you know, how much they do share with us. I really hope that Caitlin feels that she was really welcome here and that she's excited to come back to another event. Maybe we'll see her at the Tournament of Champions, for example. Wouldn't that be fun in January to see her tee it up in another LPGA Pro-Am? Obviously, she has a sponsorship here with Gamebridge, and so there's a natural connection here. She's an ambassador, much like Annika. But the tour would love to see her become involved in other events as well.
Do you think this is a welcome distraction for Nelly Korda, Beth-Ann, in the sense that we haven't seen her for more than a month? She's had a minor injury, but it might actually be welcome to know that most of the eyeballs are on somebody else instead of Nelly herself this week?
I think that's fair. I also think that maybe there might be some also comparisons to how can Nelly, you know, do for golf what Caitlin's done for basketball. So, you know, hopefully, you know, this is an opportunity where you know, both players can be relaxed and really feel like, you know, they can just soak up this hopefully not rare opportunity.
Well, Beth-Ann, thank you so much, as always, for taking the time, and enjoy the day.
Thank you.
And here's a look at what's happening where in the world of golf this week, coming up after our show, the Southwest Airlines Showcase at Cedar Crest. The DP World Tour season finale wrapped up in Dubai beginning Thursday, 2 a.m. Eastern Time. On Golf Channel, the Annika driven by Gamebridge at Pelican, Thursday, 10 a.m. on Golf Channel. And then finally, we get to the PGA Tour at Thursday at 1 p.m. for the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. We're back on Golf Today. The PGA Tour has just 2 weeks left in its fall schedule. This week, they're in the islands for the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. Live first-round coverage begins Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. And there's a lot at stake for plenty of players teeing it up this week. Those who finish inside the top 60 in the FedEx Cup standings will be eligible for the first two signature events of 2025 on the PGA Tour. One of the players you see just inside that bubble at number 58 is Ben Griffin. And Ben joins us now from Bermuda. Ben, it's a little bit of a strange week. You're on a strange bubble in a way in that you don't actually have a tour card at stake. It's, I guess, just a little bit of extra gravy if you can stay inside that top 60. Is the pressure any different for you this week?
Yeah, there's a lot less pressure. It's a lot better than being the guy 123 on the FedEx Cup right now that's fighting for their job security for next year. So, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there with just extra gravy. Lot to play for this week, but for me, you know, I'm trying to win and, you know, provide more job security for me in the future on the PGA Tour. And, yeah, if I can finish in that top 60, it'd be really nice to get a tee time at Pebble and Riv.
Ben, I talked to you in Canada after you finished runner-up. That was your best finish of the season. What did you feel like clicked for you going forward the rest of the season after that?
Yeah, it just felt like I was very consistent. You know, I had a couple weeks where I didn't necessarily play well, but, you know, those happen. And I felt like I, you know, from Canada on, I basically solidified, you know, my card for next year was top 125. So, again, it was just kind of playing free golf. Was able to, you know, be a little bit more aggressive at certain events, and had some solid finishes after that at the John Deere and then at the Wyndham Championship before the playoffs. And so this fall's been good. You know, I've played pretty solid in the fall schedule in the past, and so far I've been kind of trending a little bit, I'd say. And so I'm really excited to be back here in Bermuda, a place where I've had some success in the past.
Have you run any of the numbers on what you need in terms of a finish this week, Ben, to guarantee yourself a spot in that top 60?
Honestly, I haven't, but I know a good finish pretty much locks it up. And again, I think it's just keeping my mindset more on trying to win a golf tournament than have a certain finish position, even though first is technically a finishing position. You know, it's, if you try to win, a lot of things kind of get taken care of, even if you don't quite get the job done. So, yeah, that's my goal this week. It's going to be a very windy week, going to be battling the elements. And I feel like that's a place where, it kind of fits my game a little bit more when things are tough.
Will any part of you be watching the leaderboard to see what's happening to other guys who could actually directly impact your position regardless of what you're doing?
I'll try to stay away from that. No, the moment you kind of get caught up thinking in other guys and playing this points game, you know, golf's already hard enough. Why try to put these external factors in and make it even tougher? So I'm just focused on the game plan and trying to play as well as I can and let things shake out the way they shake out.
Ben, there's a pretty significant plan that's been proposed by the PAC, the PGA Tour. The policy board will vote on it next week, essentially cutting the number of fully exempt cards, cutting field sizes. Have you put any thought into this? What's your take on it?
Yeah, you know, I've talked to several members of the PAC and talked to people with the PGA Tour, trying to learn more and more about some of the changes. And I think ultimately they're trying to make these changes to make a better product, make it better for the fans, and, you know, make it better for us players and our personal experiences. So, you know, I know a lot of people are working hard behind the scenes trying to figure this all out, and whether or not it's going to be voted on or not, who knows. For me, I know they're working in our best interests, and I just hope we can, you know, all come to a good conclusion and keep progressing forward and making the PGA Tour one of the best places to play.
Do you feel as though rank and file members of the tour are sufficiently heard in this new dynamic, Ben? Because we hear a lot about how the tour is more and more catered to the very elite cream at the top here, and that the rank and file members aren't heard enough. Is that your experience, or do you feel that's kind of overstated a little?
Well, I mean, I think you look at any sort of business, there's no doubt that the people at the top are going to have the biggest say. It's just the way the kind of world works. But nonetheless, our voices are definitely still heard. We have access to talk to, you know, player relations teams members and, you know, the PAC and people on the board, and we have the opportunities to give our opinions and do that all internally. And so, you know, as players, as a guy in my shoes, if I feel like there's a change that I don't like, or if there's changes I do like, I have those same opportunities as any other PGA Tour player to give feedback. And you know, we're all in this together. We're trying to create the best product for all golf fans, and you know, I think they're doing the right things and making the right steps to try to make some of those things happen.
Now, Ben, you're a bit of a amateur meteorologist. We did this in Dallas where I had you do a forecast going into, I think it was the third round, and you completely whiffed on that one. Didn't get it right at all. Do you want to try it again for this week in Bermuda?
No. They call it the Bermuda Triangle for a reason. There's a lot of things that change very fast. So I can guarantee wind. So I'm just going to go with that. We're going to have high winds this week.
Ben, you kind of know what it's like to look in the rear view a little bit. Throughout the season, when you knew that the top 70 made the playoffs, you spent a lot of time, say, in the upper 50s, low 60s in the FedEx Cup standings. Does that become a motivation or a distraction on a week-to-week basis on the tour now that everyone is so hyper-focused on these cutoff numbers?
Yeah, it can be a distraction. And, you know, regardless of what ends up happening in the future in terms of what these cutoff numbers are, every single golfer has an opportunity every single week to win a golf tournament. And you got to focus in on those individual weeks. You know, you can think about pulling, you know, these eight events together in the fall and call it a fall series. You can call it, you know, the West Coast swing, the Florida swing, all these places where certain players maybe play well, maybe don't, whatever it may be. But for me individually, I like to just think about each individual tournament. You know, there's one trophy at the end of the week. You're still playing for something really big that week. And the moment you start thinking about these big pictures of where you can finish and where you're stacked up against others, it's an external thing that only can get in the way, in my opinion. So I'm just focused on the task at hand, and I just love playing each individual PGA Tour event. I think every single one has their unique storylines, has unique things to offer, and a lot to play for. And so I'm just really excited to be here in Bermuda for the Butterfield event and try to chase the trophy down.
Ben, last week Rory McIlroy talked about maybe scaling back his schedule next year. Now, this week's event in Bermuda, I think it's your 34th start. You played 37 events last year on the PGA Tour. How do you balance being rested and wanting to get in as many tournaments as you can?
Yeah, I know. I guess I still have 15 weeks after last year where I could still play, so I need to find some more events. Maybe I need to go to the DP World or somewhere else. But I love traveling, love playing. You know, it's been my dream as a kid to play on the PGA Tour. And so, I like to remind myself that some weeks, even when I'm maybe a little tired, okay, what would 16-year-old Ben say? Would you take this week off? And he would probably say, no, keep playing. Like, as long as you feel, you know, you have enough energy and feel like you can compete. So I feel like I do a really good job of resting early in the weeks. You see me here in my hotel room midday on a Tuesday when probably a lot of guys are at the course. I'm very familiar with the golf course. I'm going to go out there in a little bit and do an hour or two of work, but I'm by no means going to stress out and hit a bunch of balls or anything like that. I'm going to trust my game plan, and I think that allows me to play a lot of weeks on tour by figuring out those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, how to balance those the best in terms of energy and still be excited when I tee it up on Thursday and still have that motivation.
Ben, I'm intrigued by this golf bag over your right shoulder. There's a lot of head covers in that bag. Even Rex Hoggard doesn't have that many head covers. Are you taking extra clubs to the course these days or demoing new equipment?
No, I typically bring 15 clubs to a course. This week it'll be 14. I exchange my 2-iron for a 7-wood depending on course conditions and then weather conditions on top of that. And so I have a couple extra head covers just as a backup 3-wood that I won't bring to the course. And I think there might be a backup driver in there too. So a couple extra wedges from previous weeks. I'm a hoarder, so those will go somewhere in my garage when I get home or maybe to a friend. We'll see. But yeah, it's, you know, playing a lot of weeks on tour, you rack up a lot of different, you know, golf clubs, equipment, and then I have a lot of very heavy bags. So it is what it is, but yeah, I've probably got 20 clubs in that bag right now.
Along those lines, I asked you earlier this year why you carried two launch monitors, and you actually had a patented answer that you told me on the record, and then there was an answer off the record that's actually the real answer. Would you like to give the real answer right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, on tour, you can't go on a range without seeing a TrackMan or a GC Quad laid down, and so I like to treat that as my tour card. I don't have to have my physical credential when I walk to the range as long as I'm carrying one of those. Normally, they don't even look at you. They know you're going to be a golfer. So not trying to give any ideas to any fans out there to bring a TrackMan or Quad and automatically you're going to get on the range. But that's my joke is if you're carrying that, no one's going to stop you because everyone knows you're probably a professional golfer.
Well, Ben, we appreciate your time and good luck this week in the wind. We know you'll play well.
Yep, time to hit it low. Thanks, guys.
When Golf Today continues, we're joined by legendary caddy Jim Bones Mackay, who is still working with some of the game's best players, but in a different role. We'll get a sneak peek of a new episode of Playing Lessons and talk about the state of the game with Bones next.
Jim Bones Mackay spent a career caddying for some of the world's best players, including Phil Mickelson for 25 years, and more recently, two-time major champion Justin Thomas. Well, in the latest two-part series of Playing Lessons streaming on Golf Pass, Bones traveled to Vegas to meet up with one of the liveliest personalities on the LPGA Tour, Jenny Shin. She shared her playing tips and strategies that have led to a successful career over the past decade. And Bones joins us now from his home in Scottsdale, Arizona. Bones, what was it like spending some time with Jenny Shin? Did the old dog learn a few new tricks out there?
I certainly tried to. She is a one talented young lady. I was blown away by her ability, and certainly shouldn't be, given the fact that she's played some incredible golf the last couple of years. But so much fun to be around. We asked her to hit all kinds of shots, trouble shots, normal shots, what have you, and she pulled them off at will. And so it was just a lot of fun to I don't get a chance to see the ladies play as much as I'd like to, but she reinforced what I already knew, that they are incredible players.
Bones, you have spent a lot of time in this game around some very special players. But was there any part of Jenny's game that really impressed you?
Yeah, I think in particular the fact that they you know, she stepped on the tee and it was almost like a foregone conclusion. It was almost like, hey, guys, why even go through the process here? Let's just drop something 270 yards off the tee in the middle of the fairway and just go from there. It was just absolutely routine for her to smoke the ball down the center. And it was just incredibly impressive. And beyond that, though, I just can't stress how much fun she was to be around. I think that whoever manages Jenny Shin's got a wonderful job for themselves, because she is one marketable, one very, very good golfer and a lot of fun to be around, as I mentioned.
Bones, you've hosted several episodes of Playing Lessons. Is there anyone you've been around where you've been kind of slightly surprised or caught off guard when they start to explain their method or approach to a particular shot that kind of you weren't expecting from them?
We did one with Patrick Cantlay a few years ago, and I was just fascinated by the way he goes about doing things. I think his thought process in terms of how he puts shots together, executes, what have you, is just a little different than a lot of people, and he's an extremely intelligent person. So that was a lot of fun to hear him break down, and not to mention the fact the first shot he hit all day was about a 3-iron on a par 3 that he hit to 6 inches. So we got off to one heck of a start. But, you know, whether it's Patrick or Jenny or whomever, it's just a lot of fun just to dig deep and see how these players tick internally.
Bones, you've done a lot of these episodes. Does one stand out for you that you look back and you really enjoyed yourself? Would this qualify as that? Because Jenny is a lot of fun to be around.
I would think probably Max Homa. I think Max Homa is arguably the most entertaining person in the game, certainly with the men that I tend to spend most of my time around. There's just something about that guy. I think he's the coolest guy in the game. A lot of fun to be around. He does a lot, charitably speaking, here in the Scottsdale area. He does live here in town where I do. And just a guy you can't spend enough time with. And I think that as he goes through some swing changes now, I saw him out on the range yesterday hitting balls. I think he's just a guy that's just driven to be the very best player he can be. And I think he strives to possibly get to number one in the world if he can do that down the road.
I know you're enjoying the broadcast work again, Bones. Are you done with caddying, or is there one guy who might call you that would actually get you back out there with a bag on the shoulder again?
No, I think I'm all done, Eamon. It's caught up with me a little bit physically. So I think that I had 35 good years out there about, and it certainly was an incredible experience, saw some amazing things. But I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that, you know, my back hurts a little bit and I creak a little bit when I walk. But I'm basically the guy out of the bullpen now. If someone gets hurt, you know, breaks an ankle or, God forbid, or something along those lines, somebody needs help for a week and I'm not doing television, I'd be happy to help. But beyond that, I'm very, very happy to be working for NBC and the Golf Channel.
Bones, your perspective from inside the ropes and working for the Golf Channel and NBC has shown that the difference between maybe the world's top 10 ranked golfers and the world's top 50 or 60 or 70 is very, very thin. The margins are thin when it comes to the top 100, even the top 200 in the world. There's some changes going on right now in the PGA Tour about cutting the number of fully exempt members, cutting field sizes. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I certainly read what you did, Rex. I think that I understand the players wanting to not have these issues with play finishing on a particular day. I'm a huge fan of Monday qualifying, so I'd be very sad if that got compromised in some respect. But I get where the tour is going with this, and I have full faith in the tour and in Jay Monahan and the guys that are on these committees and boards, if you will. I think as long as they've exhausted everything that they can do in terms of slow play, I have no problem with them cutting the size of the field.
We spend a lot of time on this show talking about players' bones. Who is the, in your mind, who is the most underrated caddy on the PGA Tour?
Wow, underrated caddy. Holy smokes. Can I think about this for a little bit? That's I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to say Ted Scott. You know, as silly an answer as that is, simply because look what happened when Ted went to work for Scottie Scheffler. You know, Scottie was having a little bit of trouble getting over the hump. It had nothing to do with who was working for him before. I think that just sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle with a caddy, and Scottie certainly did that with Ted. And, you know, I was talking to a player the other day who was talking about watching Scottie Scheffler hit a shot into the 10th hole at Augusta National this past year on the incredibly windy day where the other players in the group were just trying to get it off, onto the green. And Scottie Scheffler hit a 6-iron to 4 feet and made three. I think that it's just those guys are next level on the same page. They speak the same language. And I think that Scottie Scheffler just couldn't possibly, he could go through every caddy in the game and couldn't possibly come close to finding a guy as good for him as Ted Scott is.
There are a lot of guys under pressure at this time of the year, you know, a lot at stake with guys trying to secure status for the 2025 season, some trying to play their way into the signature event. So a lot of guys are on the bubble as we head into Bermuda this week and RSM next week. What would you tell the caddies to do in that kind of environment when the players are going to be feeling a little raw, a little tense, a little nervous? Does the caddy need to adapt to that kind of environment?
I think they do. I mean, I think that certainly those players that you mentioned are going to be under more pressure or a different kind of pressure than they've ever been under in their lives, most likely. And I think from the caddy perspective, it's all about keeping it small. It's really easy to be on the range on Tuesday and Wednesday and obsess about where you are on that list. Am I 123? Am I 128? Where really what really matters is your opening tee shot on Thursday and then the next shot after that. So I think anything the caddy can do to keep the player from obsessing about the big picture is only going to help the cause.
Bones, thank you so much for your time. And as we said earlier, welcome back to Golf Channel and NBC Sports full time.
Gents, thanks so much. Have a great holidays.
Coming up next, we're checking back in on the LPGA Tour as Caitlin Clark prepares to tee it up at tomorrow's Pro-Am at the Anika. Today, she's on site meeting with the media, and you'll hear her thoughts coming up next. Getting closer to what should be a really fun day on the LPGA Tour is tomorrow. Caitlin Clark would tee it up Pro-Am at this week's LPGA Tour stop. Caitlin will play with Nelly Korda and Annika Sorenstam. And you can catch it tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on Golf Today. Earlier today, Caitlin participated in a leadership summit at the Annika.
The young girls that are at our game screaming and having the time of their lives, a lot of them, when you go up to them, just start crying or... It's cute, but also I was just in their shoes, you know, however many years ago. I was begging my dad or my mom to take me to whatever sporting event it was, and I was screaming, and I wanted to meet the players, whether they were on the high school team or whether they're pros or in college, because it was so impactful. Like, I loved being, I wanted to be who they were. I think everybody talks about, like, the effect that we have on them, but also they have the same effect on us. And I think that's what's really cool about it is to see how much joy it really brings them and it brings their families. And that one game where they spend 2 hours of their whole entire year has such an impact on their entire childhood. And I think that's really cool to think about. And, you know, that's the reason that you play. It's not because of the wins and the points you score. It's the amount of joy that you can bring people and the young girls that will one day grow up to hopefully, you know, be whatever they want to be and get to talk about those moments too.
And you're not new to the game. You played
well,
for a
I'm
while.
Strong and I can hit it. It's just, it doesn't usually go straight. I mean, sometimes it goes straight, but it depends. You just step up there and you hope for the best, but no, it's fun. And it's so much different than basketball. That's why I love it. It's, you know, individual, it's a challenge, especially mentally. Like, that's what's so beautiful about golf. And I think being outside, I love that. That's the one bad thing about being in the WNBA now. It's in the spring and the summer. Part of the fall, I really miss a lot of opportunity to play golf. So now that the season ended, I tried to play as much as I can. But it's getting a little cold in Indianapolis now. But I love it. It's something fun to do. You can make it competitive, go out there with your friends and, you know, just try to have as much fun as you can and do something outside of basketball is really what I love about it.
Well, if you ever want to get away from the cold at any point, I know everyone here at Pelican Golf Club would love to have you.
I appreciate it.
Let's talk some numbers in golf. What's your lowest round?
Oh, God.
Can you get into this?
I can get in the mid-80s if I'm lucky, yeah. But usually I'm just praying to break 100, so, yeah.
That's a lot of us in this room. Yeah. Well, you're with Annika Sorenstam. Yeah. Nelly Korda is rounding out the Pro-Am group for you guys. So,
yeah,
she's in very, very good hands.
It's okay. I'm a good sport about it. Hey, I don't want to hit anyone with a golf ball. That is my number one priority.
It's going to be a pretty crowded gallery around here.
That doesn't help.
For more on Caitlin Clark, we welcome back Kira K. Dixon, who was able to catch up with tournament host Annika Sorenstam.
Yeah, Rex, I was actually also in the room of the Women's Leadership Summit earlier today when Caitlin was speaking alongside Kathy Ireland and Annika Sorenstam. There's just a lot of joy in that room and a lot of joy to talk about the game we all love, of course, golf, and getting to share in that and the power that it has, the connection that it can bring, and the power that it brings to our lives. And I don't know if you can kind of hear in the background, but all of the participants of the Women's Leadership Summit are all milling about having a wonderful day here today at Pelican Golf Club. But as you mentioned, I did get to speak with Annika Sorenstam, because when you're at the Annika, you need to speak with the Annika. And this is what she had to say about Caitlin Clark.
Well, first of all, we're thankful that she's here. I think she's been the kind of the one, and, you know, when you talk about women's sports, she's kind of, other than Nelly, it's been Caitlin. And what she has done is amazing. And like you said, bringing other people into the sport. And golf has been, I think, quite a passion for her for quite some time. So I look forward to meeting her and seeing her play. But you're right. I mean, it just puts our tournament in a different limelight and just different excitement. You know, they're streaming the summit today. They'll be streaming the Pro-Am. I mean, things that we haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. You know, wherever she goes, she's been selling out. So hopefully we'll sell out here too. So we're excited about that.
You're somebody who can relate to being under the spotlight, to having all of that pressure. What are you most inspired by of seeing what Caitlin's done under all of the pressure that she's under?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's been a lot of pressure. I mean, a lot of people looking at her. And, you know, when you set the bar high and continue to move that bar, I mean, people are always going to try and push you down and take you down in different ways and getting criticized. But she's just handled it so well, you know, with such poise and such class, and just keep moving, setting records and doing things that have not been done before. And I mean, that's just, to me, is obviously very inspiring, but it motivates a lot of women to be able to even reach their full potential. And, you know, she's so young too, and who knows what her future will be, but she's just starting out with a bang, and I'm sure she's going to continue. So we're excited to have her here. And I mean, everybody's like talking about it because it makes this tournament a little different than it has been in the past. And it just shows you that women athletes can do a lot of things, not just in sport, but in other things.
So you might remember at the end of Caitlin Clark's basketball season, the WNBA Rookie of the Year said, I'm going to go and become a professional golfer in the off season. And she made sure to mention in the Women's Leadership Summit today, it was a joke. I was kidding. I know I'm not going to become a professional golfer. In fact, she plans to spend a lot of the round tomorrow just filming Annika Sorenstam and Nelly Korda's swings, because that's who she's going to get to be paired with. But I just really can't overstate, Rex, the buzz that's created here this week. And even just seeing the national media members that have arrived here, the basketball media that's here to cover Caitlin Clark in what's sure to be a really special day in the women's game tomorrow.
Thank you very much. We look forward to catching up with you tomorrow during that Pro-Am when you will be on the golf course. We have coverage of Caitlin Clark's Pro-Am on Wednesday from the Annika driven by Gainbridge. You can see highlights from the Pro-Am on Golf Today and Golf Central.